ॐ नमो भगवते
Citing the Lord's vision. We just have texts 1, 2, and 3 today. So, Shuka Uvacha is responding now to the questions asked by Maharaj Parikshit. So this first one, we will do this, I guess, in some detail because there's time. Atmamayam Kriti Rajam Purasya Anubhava Atmanaha Na Vritita Bhakta Sambandha Vapna Rastu Iva Anjasa. O King, unless one is influenced by the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, in other words, Atma Maya, the first Atma is the Lord, his energy, without that, there is no meaning to the relationship of the pure soul in pure consciousness with the material body. That relationship is just like a dreamer's seeing his own body working. This requires some understanding. This example, it means a dreamer, well, a sleeper, really, swapna drastur, the sleeping seer, having a dream. And in the dream, there's a dream body. Now, what is the relationship between the in the example, there's a sleeper, he's lying in bed at night. And then in the dream, we'll use an example that Prabhupada gives a slight different kind. In the dream, he's dreaming that he's being chased by a tiger in a jungle. Now when you say there's no meaning to the relationship, let us ask, what is the distance between the sleeper and the tiger? Take a ruler and measure the distance, right? Which is, what are you talking about? There's just no relationship in that way. So, this is answering the question given earlier in the previous chapter, the seventh text, which is an inquiry as to how a living entity began his material life. He said back there, did it just happen or was there a cause, as I recall? Is that right? Basically, we'll look at text 7. Did it just happen? Was there a cause?
I have a question. Yeah.
What's that?
Well, if you say a dreamer is running from a tiger in his dream, and then you say what's the distance between the dreamer and the tiger, that has no meaning. if you say what's the distance between the dreamer and his sense of fear, that has me.
That's different. But is the fear? Well, let's say he's suffering. Is he suffering or isn't he suffering? Well, in one sense, yeah,
he's
he has the fear. On the other hand, if he wakes up, hey, I was always okay. There was never any danger. Everything is fine. So, just like there's Maya Sukha, so there's Maya Dukkha. It's both Maya, they're illusory. And if he could somehow see that he was dreaming, the fear would go away.
Yeah.
But he's covered by the dream potency. Maybe his own sleeper, as the sleeper, it's his own Atma Maya. He's covered by the dream potency. So he takes it seriously because he's identified himself with the dream body. But the relationship between him and the dream body is not there. In the sense of space and time, it's just all over. Figment of the imagination. Hmm? Yeah.
Yeah, but while he's in the dream.
While he's in the dream, right.
His fear is real.
But what do you do when he's suffering in the dream? Do you go on a tiger hunt with him? Do you somehow parachute into his dream and help him hunt the tiger? Well, you wake him up. That's our point. You wake him up. That's how we solve people's problems, is we wake him up.
Okay.
Right.
That's a good answer.
Huh?
That's a good answer.
Is that a good answer?
Yeah.
Glad you like it. Yes.
Sometimes we can experience that dreams, you know, sometimes we can completely identify ourselves with a dream. But sometimes we can actually understand that this is only a dream,
yeah,
and I'm sleeping. So
those are called, they have a name, lucid dreams. Lucid dreams, where you dream and you know it's a dream.
And
is that often? They're usually pretty rare.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. As far as I understand, you know, we meant to come to the stage when we're just resting, when we're fully conscious of ourselves.
We're supposed to come to the stage where we're fully conscious when we're dreaming? Yeah?
Like chakra.
When we're completely Krishna conscious, all our dreams will be lucid.
Mm-hmm. Is it?
I've never heard any judgment about that. Is anyone else there? It's sort of one of the least interesting effects of becoming Krishna conscious.
I didn't see.
He said that when, in other words, Krishna consciousness is sustained during the... When one is Krishna conscious, one remains Krishna consciousness in the waking, the dreaming, and the it's because it's turiya. What's it called? The dream, deep dream, the sleep.
Deep sleep.
Yeah.
Susupti.
Susupti. Yeah. There's swapna and susupti, but then there's the fourth, right?
Right.
So according to the fourth state, that would be sustained during all of them, so that while one was dreaming, he's thinking this may mean that you have lucid dreams, that you're Krishna, you're aware of what's going on.
But sometimes it goes hours.
Huh?
Sometimes it goes hours, even in bathroom, like people can be in Dennis.
I can't understand what you're saying.
The dream continues even if you're in the...
While
you're in the bathroom. Yeah. Oh, the dream continues?
Fully awake.
Being afraid.
I notice when I fall asleep, it's not that I fall asleep and then dream, it's I start dreaming and then fall asleep. It's weird, isn't it?
My question would be more like practical. Because, you know, this state of, you know, sleep is actually destroying, you know, like stopping our development of Krishna consciousness, because while we're awake we can, you know, do so many Krishna conscious activities,
yeah,
and then our consciousness becomes purified, but then dream just stops it. And
well, it depends on what you dream of. If you dream of Krishna.
Ideally.
Yeah, right, well, you know, it happens.
Where do you draw the line between dream at that point, if you're on such an advanced level, where do you draw the
sort of, you know, manasa seva, where you're entering into the Lord.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
So anyway,
are you standing up or lying down when you do it? I guess is the best question.
One more question.
Anyway, we're talking about an ordinary guy. This is
I have one more question. I'm living with a man right now who claims he never dreams. I asked him. He said he never has dreams.
Well, you need to talk to a sleep therapist or something.
Well, he says that he can remember.
Yeah, well, it's different. Usually people dream. They say that when you're asleep and dreaming, your brain neurons are busy, you know, straightening things out and cleaning house and doing things, you know, and that you need to do that. They need to do that. Sort of, you know, when you're not working on your computer but it's still on, sometimes it goes and fixes itself and repairs its shattered files and stuff. Oh, I don't know. Okay, let's go. The question is, let me get back here. Yeah, does he acquire the body accidentally or by some cause? Yadrichchaya, does it just happen of its own accord? Or is it hetuna, due to some cause? So that's the question. So Prabhupada understands how he began his material life. And so the answer is, at least in the purport, is that, because I don't know what this basically says, is he never begins. There's no relationship, right? Which is another answer that Prabhupada gives. This, you know, this turns into the whole issue of the controversy which erupted in ISKCON about 10 years ago of the origin of the jiva. And the fact that there are statements that say one never falls from Vaikuntha. And Prabhupada's, as many statements show that one once one did, in a sense, fall, at least from somewhere out of the spiritual world. And this came up when Prabhupada was here, because one godbrother of Prabhupada said that we fell from. Brahman, from the Brahma Jyoti. And Prabhupada denied that this was true. He said to fall means to fall from an unfallen condition, and the Brahma Jyoti one is already fallen. So Prabhupada was pretty, his Prabhupada's consistent teaching, which we'll see here, is that we fell. We had a relationship with Krishna of some kind, somewhere, and we broke it out of our own will and came to the material world. That's what I mean by falling. And when he says, for example, for the title of his magazine, Back to Godhead, he means back to Godhead. However, due to the fact that it was, you know, some 20 years after Prabhupada's disappearance, now people are beginning to come up with other theories influenced by other people. And so this, the GDC had to deal with this issue. I was in the middle of some of it. Because a book was published, you know, not a leaf falls, even the leaf falls from Vaikuntha. And then and the claim was that actually the soul, when it says they are nityabhada, eternally conditioned souls, there's either nityasiddha, nityabhada, that means those that are nityasiddha never fall down, and those that are nityabhada never were unfallen, never were unbound. and that we are eternally conditioned, and that Prabhupada, when he had many statements sounding to the contrary, he basically lied to us. He didn't tell us the true facts, so to speak. One reason was it was just too hard for us to grasp. That was one theory. And the other theory is that somebody stood in front of a sannyasi stood in this kind of stood in front of the GBC and said that actually the idea that the jivas are eternally bound, as it were, created in Maya. This sort of you could say created in Maya. They never were had a relationship with Krishna. They were just created in Maya. Makes God look so monstrous that this is his arrangement, that in order to preach to people and not to have them have a bad opinion of God, the acharyas lie. That was the other one. So anyway, the GBC came out and had a ruling on it. In the course of it, I wrote actually an article for Back to Godhead called On Conceiving the Inconceivable, which dealt with the temporal dimension, you know, because somehow this question involves a relationship between time and eternity. And it's very hard to characterize that. And then there was a bunch of people who wrote me back complaining about this, with objections to this article, you know, from the No Fall group. And so I wrote a second article, The Inconceivable, One More Time, or something like that, respond to this. I got involved with this. And then Ridhananda Maharaj wrote a book also responding to this thing. So there's a history of all of this. I don't know how much you really want to get into this, if there's still an issue around. But we'll see. The main thing Prabhupada wants to say is here that it has a cause. It has a cause. Because here the verse says, one becomes influenced by the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so Prabhupada traces out, what is this? How does one become influenced by this energy? And he wants to say, first of all, he says, here you can see, the spirit soul is distinct from the material conception of his life, but he is absorbed in such a conception that is influenced by this Atma Maya, the external energy, because of being influenced by the external energy of the Lord called Atma Maya. This has already been explained in the first canto, in connection with Vyasadeva's realization of the Supreme Lord and his external energy. He saw the Lord and his energies, including the external energy, bewildering the conditioned souls. The external energy is controlled by the Lord, and the living entities are controlled by the external energy, by the will of the Lord. Therefore, although the living being entity is purely conscious in his pure state, he is subordinate to the will of the Lord in being influenced by the external energy of the Lord. And he cites Bhagavad Gita 15:15. It is by me that it comes from me, comes remembrance. Does it say remembrance of Krishna? Knowledge of Krishna? Forgetfulness of Krishna? The word in Sanskrit in the 15:15 is apohanam, which I believe it means literally pushing away. Pushing Krishna away. So, if it says the Lord does this, he gives them a memory of Krishna, and he takes it away. Prabhupada says, the next question, automatically, well, why does he do this? Why is there such consciousness and such forgetfulness? The answer is that the Lord clearly wishes that every living entity be in his pure consciousness as part and parcel of the Lord, and thus be engaged in the loving service of the Lord as he is constitutionally made. This means to say that God does not want there to be a material world. This whole thing, here God is all powerful. You should think about this. Here God is all powerful, and yet something happens that he doesn't want. How can this be? And the answer is, but because the living entity is partially independent also, he may not be willing to serve the Lord, but may try to become as independent as the Lord is. So there is this idea of free will. Now we should think about this notion of free will. Here's a jiva, and the jiva has this thing called free will. So what free will means is something happens that can be referred only to the jiva. If you can find another cause outside of myself for my making a decision, then my will is not free. I'm either compelled by my karma or by somebody, you know, something. There's something that makes me act in a certain way. But if I'm free, my will is free, then you can refer the cause only to me. This means that things happen when a jiva or anyone makes a free decision. That means things happen, and it looks like without a cause. But the cause is, we refer that it happening to the jiva. If it's a free decision, you can have complete, absolute knowledge of all the antecedent conditions, everything that's there in the world, up to the point that the jiva makes a decision. Even with your absolute knowledge, you cannot say for certain what will happen next. Because there's something else that adds something to what happens, and that is the jiva. Now, if there's a causal background, you may be able to predict with some reliability. There's a whole history of evil actions, that the next action will also be evil. But if there's freedom, it's not. There's always a chance that it might be different. That's what it means to be free.
How Krishna can know the future?
My personal judgment is that he knows the future completely, but as the future. I believe that the future is
present.
Huh?
He knows the future completely, but as the
future. Did I say the present?
Yes.
He knows the future as future. As future, the future is different from the past. The future, as far as I can understand, is objectively fuzzy. So you may think of time like a strip of film going through a camera. And it's all there in the past. But that means there's no free will. So fuzzy means that it, to some extent, there may be some place where, as the future, either this will happen or that will happen, and it depends on what the living entities decide. So therefore, it's a little fuzzy.
Even to Krishna?
Even to Krishna. That's my understanding.
But he knows circumstances of most choices.
Yeah, because it's not as fuzzy as you might, because he knows, you know, he has complete cause of their karma and everything, but if there's free will, it's objectively fuzzy. Yeah?
I was, when I read Boethius's address, way of addressing this question, I thought it made quite a bit of sense to me.
Yeah, that's another idea, right? That even that Krishna's knowing the future Say it's not objectively funny. He knows what you're going to do, but that doesn't cause you to do it.
But because he's outside of our realm of time.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. That's another. That's the traditional Christian answer to this question. That's right. But I don't think that you.
You have to do something.
Huh?
Oh no. Okay. He's outside the time, so he knows.
Yeah, yeah. So for Krishna, it's like it's all in the past already. For example, you could think of
all in the present.
Or all in the present, right? He's all in the present, right? You could say it's all in the present. But from our point of view, it looks like you have no choice. That's another answer. I tend to go with the fuzzy one myself. It doesn't mean he doesn't know the future. It's just that to me, this means that time is real. And that Krishna's being outside time, it's a very hard thing to think of. Because on the other hand, being outside time, it may look to, whether the whole material world looks to Krishna like a present. I tend to think that's not really Vaishnava. I think time is real. It's because it makes time an illusion. But it's an energy of Krishna. The other thing is, in the spiritual world, it's not just a presence. Because although, first of all, Bhakti Siddhanta says in the spiritual world, there's no past, present, or future. Because Christian mystics tend to think there's no past or future, but an eternal present. Bhaktisiddhanta says no past, present, or future. But you have to understand that what happens in the spiritual world are called pastimes, the lila. There's sequence of events. There has to be. There's Astakalya Leela, you know, there's the things that happen. And so Prabhupada says in the third canto that there is time in the spiritual world. But he says it has no power to control activities. Whatever that means. So it's not a simple eternal presence.
So the thing is, if the future is fuzzy...
But anyway, that doesn't matter. You know, that's just my personal... I thought about this for a long time. I did a doctoral dissertation on the subject.
Actually.
Yeah.
It's just that, I mean, in the articles that you're referring to before, in those unconceivably inconceivable, you describe this kind of...
Yeah, I did. That's true.
But it sounds now like what you're saying... You'd reject that description.
No, I don't exactly reject it, but I think the situation is, it's true so far as it goes, but I think that maybe there's a little more to it. That's what I think. Because that's what it looks like. In the material world, remember, 365 of our years is one day for the devatas. So if you had, so there's a temporal relativity in the universe. If you had, let's say you had a television camera up there in Indra Loka, and you had the receiver down here and you were watching the devatas, it would look like they were moving in slow motion. Right? And when they would look at our cameras, you know, the camera, we'd be right? Well, that's just the beginning because 1 year of Brahma. You see, Brahma is really slow from our relative point of view, is really slow. And the story is told about King Kakutmi, that he was looking for a fit husband for his beautiful black-eyed daughter. And could not find one, and so went to Brahma to find, ask for a husband. And Brahma was just waiting. He had to wait a few minutes, for the concert to end, the Gandharvas or whatever were entertaining Brahma. And then Brahma said to him, you know, you've been up here for a little while, but while you're up here, you know, worlds have gone by down below where you came from. You know, millenniums have passed, so anyone you would have wanted as a husband for your daughter is long since vanished. So he made arrangements for her to marry Lord Balaram, who's his daughter's Revati. So there, you know, there, see, one. So it looks like you see it like a triangle, and if you go up with Brahma, obviously it this triangle narrows to a single, what looks like a single point. That's the what the mystics and Brahman realization, that's like that. This just the now moment of eternity, as they call it, right? But what really happens is if, you know, you have this triangle here going up from the material world with Brahma Loka somewhere right near the top, right? Probably a triangle is wrong. It's probably like these things, you know, where you have a graph and they never quite approach you. You know, they become asymptotic. But anyway, so here's Brahma somewhere here, and then here's the Brahmajyoti. But what happens in the spiritual world is there's this. It's like that.
What does that correspond to then?
This corresponds to, you know, Krishna Loka and all these things like that.
I
don't know what that is. The idea is it's a tree with its branches up and its roots down, and it's an inverted tree. I'm speculating, of course. Yeah, this is called, this is known as philosophical speculation, not mental speculation. No, but somehow or other, it reflects something. It just doesn't end here. And here there are pastimes somehow or other. I don't know, you know, if you know, what the relatives. You have to ask Sanatana Goswami.
I mean, I guess what it is, you know, if someone goes back to Godhead today, and another person goes back to Godhead in 100 years, or in a billion years, or in
different
cycles of creation, does it correspond to some different point of time in the spiritual world?
Who knows? You know, it would seem what this means. What this means, and I use this part of my article anyway that I wrote back to Godhead. Even have a drawing. What it means, you come down, you fall down, you're here for so many lifetimes, you go back up. How long were you gone for?
To you, it
you
seems
never left.
Yeah, but to you, it seems interminable.
While you're down here, but when you get back up here, it was like, you know, a little, you know, almost just a little slight flicker or something, you know, by this kind of logic. Beyond this, you know, I can't tell you anything.
Isn't there 100 of Brahma's years is one breath of Brahma?
Yeah.
It's even like...
Yeah, sure. Uh-huh.
In the lecturing on this, we gave some quotes from the Prabhupada's lectures, so if you just read something that seems to...
Yeah, that's right.
Correspond to what
because it is based on Prabhupada, yeah.
He says that many people inquire, how did living energy who was with Krishna fall into the material world?
The answer is?
That question is answered here. The falling living energy's condition is due to the influence of the Lord's material energy. Actually, he has not fallen.
Right.
An example is given, the moon appears to be moving,
right,
when clouds pass in front of it. Actually, the moon is not moving. Similarly, the living energy, because he's a spiritual spark of the Supreme, he has not fallen, but he's thinking, I am fallen.
That's right. This is this lecture Prabhupada gave in Tokyo, you know, where the whole thing came up. And his answer is, where the text say he never falls, Prabhupada said, yes, he never falls. Just like the person who's asleep and dreaming, was he ever in danger? He was always safe in bed. He never really left his happy condition When he wakes up, the moon is shining, and the curtains are blowing, and the soft breezes and everything. Although he woke up screaming in terror. It's just he never was in danger. So that's Prabhupada's answer, is we never fall.
What you were saying before, this idea that when you return to the spiritual world and then you ask that person, how long were you gone?
Yeah.
But to me, I don't see why that doesn't also relegate time to being an illusory potency.
It is an energy of the Lord. That's all. It's real in that sense.
But I
think if you see everything as completely deterministic, time is somehow not real. Not as real as it would be if it's the Lord's potency. The whole thing is just it's hard to explain. Anyway, we don't have to get it. It's not really, the two theories of time. I don't really know enough to know what our acharyas have said about it. Prabhupada in some places talks like there is a fuzzy... But anyway, there we have genuine freedom. We have genuine freedom, right? That is to say, there are things that happen that are, if you refer to the causes, you cannot refer the cause to Krishna. You have to refer the cause to the living entity. What it means is that if there are jivas with free will, it imposes, in a certain sense, some limitation on Krishna. Now, does that compromise his omnipotence? No. Because, in any case, you're controlled. You're controlled either through the internal, Krishna's under control, controlling you through through the external potency, or through the internal potency. So in any case, we're under the control of Krishna. There is no case where we're not under Krishna's control. But what refers to the freedom of the living entity is which energy we are controlled by.
So this is there's another implication behind this. I want to ask you about this. Is that so? Therefore, following that, the logic of what you're speaking of, you're saying that the living entity would have the capacity to surprise Krishna.
Yes, that's what I think.
And so, therefore, without surprise, there is no delight.
Well, in the spiritual world, clearly they have the capacity to surprise Krishna. Krishna has the capacity to surprise himself, even. Yeah, because the devotees are creative in their service to Krishna. It's not like it's the same damn thing all over. People hate the idea of eternity because it's just nothing happening. It's nothing new. Before I became a devotee, I saw this British movie called Bedazzled. I think there was a remake of it, but it was originally Monty Python. It was really funny. It's about a guy who sells his soul to the devil and has 10 wishes. And every time he makes it, the main wish is to get together with this girl. And he says, I want this situation, and then the devil somehow or other throws a spanner in the works, so it doesn't work out, so he keeps trying it. There's many ways about the frustration of material existence. Anyway, at one point, the protagonist says to the devil, he says, you are an angel with God, why did you leave me? why did you, become like you go into the opposition? And so they're standing in a street corner in London. There's one of these British mailboxes, which are like big, gigantic posts, And so the devil, who's in a business suit and everything, he starts circumambulating the mailbox. going, holy, 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 holy. He said, if you had to do that for all eternity, wouldn't you want to leave? So, you know, there's yeah, Krishna, I'm not completely confident of this idea about time in the material world. There are philosophers who have developed this very thoroughly, and I've come to see it's compatible with the state that Krishna knows everything past, present, and future, if the future is objectively fuzzy. And it may be, anyway, we'll have to see. That's not the real, you know, it doesn't matter. I'm really sorry I brought it up.
But I just want to finish because I want to get this. So that if we have the capacity to surprise Krishna for delight, this is also saying that we have the capacity to disappoint Krishna.
Yes, That's right. Anyway, you can think, even if you, never mind how time works, the point is, if it's freedom, there's a sense in which Krishna does, the outcome is not determined by Krishna. He may in some way know it, because he knows everything, but to me, if freedom is real, you know, he has the capacity to be surprised, and I think you can think of it that way, even if it's not literally the case. But this is the nature of independence. It's not Krishna's decision. That's why there's a material world. Because when the living entity, out of freedom, gets these competitive feelings toward Krishna, and this is what Prabhupada says it is, that it may be, in our natural position, is eternity, knowledge, and bliss. But one thing is clear, we are not the supreme. That's clear. There's the category of God, and there's a category of jivas. And you cannot rise up through the ranks and become God. Nityo nityanam, chetanas chetanana. The one is independent and the others are dependent. So, in some way or another, now people say, how could this happen in the spiritual world that Maya comes in as though first you got this sinful will and then you fell down? As far as I can see, they're the same event. And it may be that it's quite subtle. But anyway, there is the living entity may not be willing to serve the Lord, but tries to become as independent as the Lord is. All the non-devotee living entities are desirous of becoming equally as powerful as the Lord, although they are not fit to become so. The living entities are illusioned by the will of the Lord because they wanted to become like Him. So this is an antecedent cause. Did it happen? It happened for a reason. The living entity so things happen in sequence. That's why Prabhupada says, therefore, the first sinful will of a living entity is to become the Lord. He uses this expression, first sinful will, which to me is reminiscent of the phrases that Christians use of original sin. For them, original sin is something that some other guy did, Adam, that we inherit like a genetic defect. Whoa, there it is. Are the Klingons attacking or our original sin? So, no, here actually each one of us did it. Every jiva himself fell away at this first sinful will. So the first sinful will of the living entities become the Lord, and the consequent will of the Lord. So first we will, I want to be God, and Krishna wills, okay, you can't be God. The position is taken. It's not possible for you to be God, but I'm going to give you this illusion where you can forget who you really are, the servant, and you can enter into the struggle for existence and the king of the mountain game of the material world. So it seems like he turns the jivas, all these jivas loose on each other to fight it out. Who's God?
Oh man, it's really ominous. This is like special effects we're talking about. This.
Yeah, it's changed.
Huh?
It's changed.
So the first sinful will of the living entity is to become the Lord. So the thing is, well, let's go back and we'll go back. Then Prabhupada gives an example. A child is sitting there and he sees the moon in the sky like a big bright ball. He wants to have it to play with it. He can't give him the moon. But the mother gives a mirror and he has the moon's reflection. So similarly, as the child, crying child is given over to the reflection, So the crying child of the Lord is given over to the reflection, the material world, to lord it over as a karmi, and to give up in frustration to become one with the Lord. These are the two phases of misconception. First you try to become the greatest in the material world. When you're finally completely frustrated, you say, I'm going to give it all up and become God. So you still have the sinful will has not been cured. Huh? Both these stages are dreaming illusions only. And then Prabhupada said, there is no necessity of tracing out the history of when the living entity desired this, but the fact is that as soon as he desired it, he was put under the control of Atma Maya by the direction of the Lord. So this is... So the Prabhupada's insistence, which he does constantly, that we willfully turned away from Krishna, and this turning away from Krishna is the cause of our bondage. If you have the idea that you're eternally bound, you see, then what happens is you may not go to rectify the problem. You know, in Prabhupada uses the term sinful will, right? So basically, in the theistic tradition, the cause of our bondage or our fallenness is called sin, right? Whereas in the non-theistic traditions, like the Mayavada or a Buddhist, it's called ignorance. Now, we use both languages because they're both true. But Prabhupada wants to make it clear. What is a sin? He uses the term sinful will. What sin really means in the kind of deepest sense is a broken relationship. There's a relationship between two people, a relationship of trust, and it's broken. In this case, whose fault is it? Usually when there's a broken relationship and you go to the marriage counselor, he says, well, you know, it's your fault both, and you know, you're both. But in the case of Krishna, he's faultless. He didn't do anything wrong. The fault all lies on one side. We turned away from Krishna and came to the material world, and subsequently, ignorance. Prabhupada puts this first and this second. This ignorance, this being covered by Atma Maya, has this cause, and the cause is our willful turning away from Krishna. Now, if we really want to go back to Godhead, we have to restore the relationship. And to restore the relationship, Well, that's what devotional service is about. And it means ultimately coming to terms with the fact that at the bottom of all my sins and anarthas, that deep down inside me somewhere, there's this thing that I did, and I have to fix it. And I have to very deeply understand just what I did, the enormity of my crime, and I really have to beg Krishna to forgive me and accept me back. This really needs to go on as part of the process of anartha nivritti. And talking about beginningless ignorance and you never had a relationship with Krishna, so you never knew enough to turn away from him, is not helpful in this matter. So, because you can say you can take this kind of theoretical, theological discussion, but it actually has a very practical a consequence. And this is why Prabhupada insists upon this so much, that we recognize this, that we were with Krishna and we turned away and we came here. And our whole process of devotional service is to repair this relationship. And that's what should take place. And I didn't understand this myself so much until I kind of discovered it, and that happened when at a certain point I took me a long time to understand about what it entails to try to chant the holy name while becoming free from offenses. And this entails, at the core of it, just paying attention to the Hare Krishna mantra. And we notice that when we try to focus our attention on the Hare Krishna mantra, our attention tends to wander. There's three ways it wanders. First of all, one can fall asleep. Another, one can be distracted. And the other thing is just a kind of lack of interest or apathy. Now, I think what I began to experience was aversion at this, because I noticed that my mind would go away from the Hare Krishna mantra, not because I was thinking of something else, but because I was simply feeling a kind of strong mental distress or discomfort. I didn't know what this was or where it was coming from. But after I realized that's what it was, I decided I will just put up with it. I'll just endure it and try to still keep my mind focused on the holy name in spite of that. The discomfort increased. And finally, after, I don't know, maybe several weeks of this, finally what happened, it got very intense, and then it was like something broke open, and I was overwhelmed with grief. I mean, real sorrow. Extreme grief. And I realized right away what it was, that I had turned away from Krishna, and I had come to the material world, and I suddenly saw that for what it was. That it was, to me, it was like the most unforgivable crime. And I just felt, I was just swimming in this ocean of grief. Now, this is a very heavy thing to go through, and I thought it was weird. I thought this was something really strange, because we're supposed to chant and be happy. The whole thing is bliss, right? And I was chanting and be happy, and I thought this is really something strange. What I'm going through. And I couldn't tell anybody about it for a long time, because I thought it was maybe because I was a demon. And that I thought, our acharyas, they don't go through this, they came descended from the spiritual world, or maybe Westerners will have this experience or something like that. So I just, in silence, I went through this, And it was terribly painful, but it had that quality of a healing pain. You're like a massage that hurts, but somehow or other, you know, it's doing good. Because then and it didn't go away. I mean, it just kept on day after day. But at the same time, the other thing that happened is I realized I was feeling this really because I was chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. And that even though I had turned away from Krishna, he had not turned away from me because I was in fact chanting Hare Krishna. And then I thought of what Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Bhaktivinoda Thakur, all these people did basically to bring the Hare Krishna mantra to me. And so I really began to appreciate, you know, Krishna's mercy. That no matter whatever crime I had committed and turned away from him, he hadn't done it for me. Now, I went through this just while chanting japa. It wasn't something I was led to expect to go through or anything like that. And I told you I thought it was anomalous. Gradually I realized it is not anomalous. First of all, our acharyas do talk about things like this, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur's songs in Sharanagati, under the heading Dainya, humility. You know, that's what he talks about. I left you, O Lord, you know, you could see that. Then the second thing is, in the year 2000, I was doing a 64 round Kartika Vrata in Vrindavan and Govardhan, and I started, and for the first time I really discovered the Shashastika prayers, although we know them and say them and all those things like that. But I got a hold of a book with Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary and started to really get into them. And I realized that in the second of the Shashastika prayers, this is what's going on. You have to really read the Shashastika prayers. There's a kind of standard translation that we have. That was an early one that Prabhupada did, but he translated them again in the last chapter of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And there it shows Chaitanya Mahaprabhu reciting these prayers to Swarup Damodara Ramananda Roy. And it also describes, well, not only is there a kind of a Bengali commentary on it, he talking in Bengali about the meaning of them. It also describes the feelings that he went through. So in the second prayer, Nam Namakari Bahuda Nivashava Shaktista Tarpita Niyamita Smaranayana Kalaha Etadvasi Tavakripa Bhagavan Mamapi Duitaivamitisamihajanina Nurada. Mahaprabhu says when he recited this one, he felt. First thing is vishada, which means lamentation. And the second, dainya, humility. So the lamentation is this mama durdaiva, my misfortune, is there's no taste. And Prabhupada said my misfortune means that I commit offenses while chanting. And this is my misfortune. So here it is, here's your holy name. They bestow so many benedictions as described in the first verse. There's so many names, there's no hard and fast rules for chanting. Tava Kripa Bhagavan, and this is your mercy. In contrast to your mercy, there is my durdaiva, my misfortune. That I still am not attractive. So one actually has to lament. Why, and if you think, why here's Krishna, why don't I see Krishna, why am I not attracted? It can only be, if I look in my heart, that there's still some hostility or indifference toward Krishna. And I have to regret that very much. So there has to be some realization of one's own position. And therefore, dainya humility, and therefore, trinadati sunichena, that becomes natural. It's not some artificial position I have to think my way into, it's just the reality. This is my understanding of what's in the Shashastika prayers. I just happened to stumble upon it, but I'm sure it's there. And I think this, I'm certain that this is what Prabhupada is saying, that we have to understand we turned away from Krishna. And it, it, it's, And by realizing the what we did, it's a very devastating experience, but at the same time, one is saved from suicide or other things like that by the realization that there's the Lord's mercy, and that whatever I have done, I'm still loved by Krishna. Therefore, it is not an unhealthy an unhealthy condition at all. One can appreciate the Lord's mercy. That to me is why this is why Prabhupada insists this first sinful will. I think it just goes with theism, of being a Vaishnava, the primacy of whatever what the discussion is really about. It is acknowledging the first thing that came from my responsibility, my free will, that I, Krishna didn't make me turn away from him, I did it. I have to acknowledge it, accept it, and fix it, rectify the relationship. Yeah?
You described that the broken relationship is caused by sin, and that we have to do something to rectify.
Sin is the broken relationship.
Yeah. We have to do something by which Krishna will forgive us.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But then you also said a little bit later that actually Krishna never is going away from us. Does he really need to forgive us, or is he?
Well, what we have to do is in the restoration of the relationship. I think it's from our side, we just have to acknowledge what we've done. There's a general pattern. You see it also in the Christian religion. There's recognition or acknowledgement. There's confession. And to confess something means just to admit something. That's the root meaning of it, just to admit it. And sincerely admit, not just superficially, but really understand it, to be genuinely sorry. Then there is forgiveness. And then there's a restoration of the relationship. That seems to be what we have to go through.
Is it then that Krishna is always willing to forgive if we just make
Yeah, he really is. If we really want
to
come back.
We have to win him over in a sense that he's difficult to defeat.
No, he's not difficult. But what's difficult for sometimes us is to feel genuinely sorry. Especially if we understand, okay, I'm genuinely sorry, but, you know, still like to enjoy the world a little bit, or something like that, you know. Yeah. You have to be, I mean, the real thing is that it's very easy to go back to Krishna. As Prabhupada says, it only depends upon our desire. We have to really want to. We have to convince Krishna that's what we want. Because we may want it in theory, but in practice, we may still have... Because there may be traces, you know, from turning away from Krishna. And it has to... Anyway, that's my understanding of why this is an important issue. I feel a little weird talking about these personal experiences of mine, but I've done it because it's really built into the process of chanting, all this is in Prabhupada, you know, but I didn't see it, and neither did it my early teachers in ISKCON see it either. You know, it's there. Let's take a little break, and we have two more texts to go through. Huh?